Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother Vimer Dees, and welcome to another Class War Battlefield podcast. This is going to be the second week that I release two podcasts because I want to, finish the White Lives Matter four-part series by the end of the year. I want to get that taken care of. So I have two more parts, one this week, and then actually one on New Year's Eve. Actually, I'll have two episodes again because I also have kind of an end-of-the-year basement cleaning out of. I have several small podcast segments which I'm going to stitch together into a final episode. That one's going to be a bit longer though, so I'll be prepared for that. Why am I doing this though? As you can kind of tell already what it's going to be about, but let me state what it's going to be about. It's about looking ahead and looking at, or should I say, viewing the holidays in the proper context. At the beginning of the year, I said to you that one of the things that I was going to do over the next year, kind of see how it felt, was to incorporate more spiritual ideas because I felt like that was something that was wholly needed and wholly missing. And I've done that. I think if you look at the body of work that I've done this year compared to the body of work that I've done in previous years, mainly 2012, because that was the time when I was more active with this. And even what I did at the end of 2011, there is a air of spirituality to this now that wasn't there before. And I personally would like to think that, because I didn't plan it out this way, truthfully, I'd like to think that my wonderful ancestors, who I charge with being responsible for a tremendous number of meditative decisions that I've made over the course of the last couple of years, I think it was in their plans all along. And if this seems a little kind of fruity to you and a little weird, it is very common for black people to have that reverence, not only for their ancestors, but to have a deep abiding respect and a worshiping of the ancestors, because the ancestors, it is said constantly and consistently, are a part of us, and we are a part of them. We come from the ancestors, and we also go back to the ancestors when we pass away. And I have increasingly started looking at this as a way of communicating for the higher principle on this planet, the ancestral higher principle on this planet, communicate that to a society which has lost its way in the realm of spirituality and soulfulness. This society has a deep yearning for spiritualness in every way. I see it every single day. When people talk about the desire, when they talk about the desire to spend more time with family and friends, that's because they understand that they have been severed at a soul level from those things which would feed them. And I don't use that phraseology lightly. This literally is that. If you go back to the 80s and the 70s and the late 60s, you will hear people talk, particularly R&B artists, real R&B artists, talk about this empowerment that one receives when they're around people who love them. A couple, about 10 years or so, Anthony, trying to think of his name, there's a singer, an R&B singer, really great voice, old school sounding brother, made this song about that, about the empowerment and enrichment that is received when he was around his family. It's a beautiful song. Didn't get much love, and it's a beautiful song, but it's not necessarily, if I remember correctly, it wasn't necessarily well-crafted, but it was beautiful, so. But I see people needing this spiritualness, this soulfulness, and they don't understand that's what they're asking for. But that's indeed what they're asking for. When they ask for better treatment on the job so that they are valued more, that valuation is at a soul level. It's at a spiritual level. And we are taught to ignore that. We are taught to put that aside for intellect. Well, here's the thing about intellect. Western, Asian, European minds. Because when they talk about the Western world is West Asia. That's Europe. Europe is a distinction that was created by the people who lived in Europe to separate themselves from Asia. But their minds are starting to finally realize over the last 10, 15 years that intelligence isn't just mental. And what's funny is, Native Americans told them this. Native indigenous people told them this from this continent. Native indigenous people told them this from Africa. Native indigenous people told them this all across the globe. Intellect is far beyond the mental. In the eyes in the realm of what they will admit presently, intellect is five parts. It's five parts. Mental, emotional, spiritual, physical, and social. Five parts. Now, out of the five, though, The least well-developed, unless you cross over into metaphysics, is the physical. Because with the physical, they talk about melding the mind and the body. But even there's this line, which it's hard because on the one side, there's actual medical stuff, and then on the other side there's metaphysical, and there's this line which blurs. But when you really dig into it, the body itself is a physical, or excuse me, is an intellectual tool. If you do a job long enough, you know this. You know this. Because your body develops something called muscle memory. Muscle memory tells you that there's an intellect there, because if you are doing something by muscle memory, that means you don't have to concentrate on it. You drive. Most of everything that you were doing while you're driving is involuntary. Involuntary. That means you don't even have to think about it. That means there's an intellect detached from your brain that is doing that. Now, out of the five, social is the one that is the most misunderstood. And I shouldn't say misunderstood. It's not understood significantly enough yet. Not misunderstood. It's just, they're just now scratching the surface of what it actually is. Because in social intelligence, you have the other senses, which aren't in the body. They're trying to explain why it is that sitting together in a room with 10 people who are working on a problem, that problem not only can get solved quicker, but the ideas are usually more multidimensional and better. Oh, well, it's because you have more than one mind. Okay. A person working on that same problem for months by himself or herself may not come up with all of those ways of thinking. Oh, well, because it's different viewpoints. Every indigenous tradition tells you that you can get above your single viewpoint and visualize something in multiple levels. But even in those instances, they will tell you that there's a power greater when you magnify it by multiple people. There's an intelligence there, and it's part of the spiritual pattern, it's part of the emotional pattern, it's part of the mental pattern. It is part of everything that makes us who we are, that they now characterize as intellect. They can't even explain how the spiritual one works. There's theories how spiritual intelligence works. There's theories, there's books, I've read some of them. Well, that's another one that they don't understand too much about. But all of this goes into the yearning, the deep, deep yearning that we have. And then from those five intelligences, we cross over to the senses. And we realize, as we are neglecting those intelligences, that we are dulling our senses. That we are losing control and ability to use sharply those physical senses that we are given free of charge to use in any way that we want to use them. And yet we wonder why our children and many people under the age of 30 are addicted to video games. That's the only time when they could feel completely. We live in a society that is spiritually lacking. And Christianity ain't feeding it anymore. Why? Because everything has its place under the sun. Christianity, I was reading a book earlier this year by a Jewish author, and he made a great point. He said, you have to understand, every incarnation serves a purpose at a moment in history. Even if it's not a good purpose, it'll serve the purpose that the collective needs. And so everything has come about and it's died because it just wasn't necessary anymore. But you will have people who try to cling to it. And once in a good while, those people who cling to it evolve it again to make it more pliable. more applicable to current situations. You will have schools of thought that dominate for two or three centuries. And then in the social consciousness dies. And in that, the concept of social consciousness, it's a collective memory that is separate from, but also part of, regional, national, global consciousness. All different things. Won't get into that. But he said, it'll die. It'll look like it died in the social consciousness for a couple of years, for a couple of centuries. But you'll have a group of people who stick with it. Usually because they are, they lack the capacity to go forward enough to see the vision that required for the new world, the new time period that they're entering, because the new world is metaphorical in this instance. So then, in a couple of centuries, they'll get somebody who takes the old way of thinking and says, okay, we don't need this. We need this. The ancestors are giving me this, or the gods are giving me this. Boom. Something new. Here. And it'll be the conservative element who clung to the old who will try to shut down the new. Sometimes, and sometimes not, the conservative element evolves and realizes that it's the teachings that they liked, and it's just now more pliable. We live in a society where Christianity, as it has existed for the last 400 years, is dying. Catholicism is dying. It is overseas now because it is dead in the Western world. It is planting its fangs overseas because it's dead in the Western world. Apologetic, you're Catholic, if you are Catholic. But I want you to understand why I say they're planting their fangs. You judge a tree by the fruit that it bears. You judge a seed by its actions as it grows to that tree. If that tree kills everything around it, I'm going to imagine, though, that that fruit is going to be poisonous. It may not be, but I ain't trusting it. That's why I say fangs. Catholic Church has not yet shown to me that it is not anything but a tool of destruction, and that the elevated elements that it supposedly clings to, it uses to do wrong. That's why I say what I say. There's historical evidence to back all of that up. There is no historical evidence not to. So that's why I say what I say. I'm not attacking your religion. I'm taking historical context and saying this is what it looks like that they do. You may not like it, but that's history. And that actually goes to a point of why America is in the type of spiritual decay that it's in. In order to fully reach spiritual maturity, to grow spiritually, to allow more spiritual energy in, you have to go through a phase of reevaluation, of getting rid of what doesn't work, of confronting your ghosts and your demons and reconciling what you have done. Socially, the United States has never done that. They can't do it. And so we all now exist in an era where spiritualism is on the tongue of every man, woman, and child. And yet the true demands of spiritual initiation are ignored. And this is important when you were talking about molding the caste and the class of a society. Because if you can't accurately engage in spiritual initiation, and I've seen people who claim they've been initiated. But if you can't go through that cleansing fire, your spiritualism will always be lacking. And not only will your spiritualism always be lacking, the spirit that you will ultimately attune yourself to will be lacking. And so you will forever remain in the intermediate space between the underworld and the overworld. And that intermediate space is populated by horrible creatures and spirits. There's angels, and for lack of a better word, there's demons. There's angels and there's demons. But they will come to try to push you and force you in one way or the other. The angels will try to get you to go through the fire so you can be purified. While the demons will want to keep you out of that fire. They'll send you the other way. We want you to be baptized for us, they will say. And you will be baptized. And you will work for us. And I've participated on many of pages, quote, New Age pages, that purport to be part of the spiritual tradition of ancient times. Purport to be part of a spiritual tradition of conscious means. And yet, they lack that spiritual fire cleansing and that spiritual fire. Because once you go through the cleansing, you get the fire. And your eyes open and it's not just about spirituality then. It's a social calling too. Which is why I'm discussing this for Class War Battlefield Podcast. If you go back to the post-Reconstruction period when capitalism really started rolling, and in order to allow it to roll in the United States, there was massive repression. Man, go back and read some of that history. Massive repression. Laws, which we would think of as very draconian today, were passed without care to take people's lands, to make it impossible for them to eke out a living by themselves, to slowly choke off the means of subsistence without becoming employed. For people living in the countryside. Also, the bosses of these industries can make money. Also, they can make money. And, let's be fair, so they could stop the people who are outnumbering them from getting together and overthrowing them. Because when you're working 16 hours a day, and you're receiving 2 cents every day, and at the end of the week, the company store, because the company owns everything in the area, and you end up owing more money than you received, because they also own the bars, and so you have to keep going and keep going and keep going to work, and yet you never get ahead. And you're working 16 hours a day, sometimes 18 hours a day, 6 days a week, 7 days a week. They literally passed laws. In the UK, they called it the enclosure movement. They didn't call it that here in the United States. But that's what it was. They wanted to force people who were subsisting and living on the edge of industrial society. This happened both in the North and the South, so, you know, don't get arrogant if you live in the North. And it happened a lot in the Midwest. But they wanted them to move from those plots of land into the factories, the industrial cities, to work. And people naturally rebelled. They don't tell you about this in history class. This is part of the ancestral legacy. This is why I keep telling people, stop calling yourself white, because whiteness in your genetics started at a specific time. It's really when you sold your soul. When you sold your soul to the overhanging national ego that is part of the United States, that's when you got to start to begin to call yourself white. You had to give up your traditional ethics to enable yourself to be called white. That is why even black people, you know, black people can be told that they are acting white. And it took me a long time to understand that this is a spiritual concept. You act white when you shed. In the Egyptian culture, they called it kind of a cultural sheath, a cultural skin that you get when you are born. We would call it common sense. How do you know to do certain things by the age of 8 or 9 without people telling you? Because it's common sense. It's social memory that's been passed on to me. I can do it without thinking about it. And all I have to do is have the triggers around me to make sure that I know to do it. When you get rid of that and you give yourself over to the mandates and gospels associated with America's marvelous ego, that's when you start to become white. That's when you start to become white. To go back and talk about becoming a European takes you through a process of evicting that possessive entity, that possessive energy, and reconnecting to your true roots. And that's going to take you through hard times in order to get there, but that's the cleansing fire of initiation. Ignition. R. Kelly said it best, it's the remix of Ignition. But if you go back and you look, when the American population started getting, and when I say American, I mean the people of European descent that was born on this continent at the time, started getting restless. There's two factors that I think historically led to Europeans being brought in en masse on this continent. The first one was black people were about to outnumber non-black people, white people. I believe that was a major factor. And two, the populace of those born on this continent of European descent were getting restless. They did not like this new system. They did not like the draconian laws that were coming along with it. And they were threatening rebellion. So what did the elite do? Well, we called in a whole bunch of other Europeans. And since they look just like you, what you gonna say? Nothing. They want the opportunity that you don't want. And they use them against the other. This is why, you know, when people be like, oh, well, you know, the Irish were treated as bad as black people. No, the Irish definitely were not treated as bad as black people. But the reason why the Irish were treated so, well, the Irish were treated so bad for actually another reason. That's a bad example because there's a lot of history there. I'll go to the Italians. The Italians were treated bad. Why? Because the Italians came in and were like, yeah, we taking over. And the Americans who were already here, the Europeans born on this continent, said, what the heck do you mean you're taking over? We've been living here. And that caused conflict. It happened with other people who came over here, too. But they don't want you to know about that history. That's powerful history. When you're a European living on this continent, you've been born on this continent, and you think that everything that is attributed attributable to you is tied up in genocide and murder and killing. A lot of it is. Sorry. But you don't know this part of your history? Oh, man. I'd be depressed. There's a part of your history that really reconnects you to humanity and helps you realize that you could fix the mess that your ancestors have gotten you in. You were about to rebel. That's why they had to bring in more Europeans. So then once when they were able to conflate and conflict everything about the rebellion that was about to happen, they did it by bringing in more Europeans. And they, once they started making that confliction, they did exactly what they did to black people. They started, what is it, proselytizing to them? Bringing in preachers. Bringing in Catholic men. Bringing in men of the cloth. To talk about the wonders of this system and how it connects to God's great plan for this nation. This is why, simultaneously, as you had this civilization crippling economic disease called capitalism rising, you also had the rise of something called the social gospel. The social gospel, which is something that too many people forget about. And to the extent that it is even touched on, it is so lacking in spiritual relevance, it is disgusting. I've heard some social gospel sermons. I wanted to laugh. That's how poor they were. These things weren't connected to the truth. The social gospel movements taught many things, but one of the principles that stand out to me still to this day is you cannot take care of the material, you cannot take care of the spiritual needs of a person until you take care of their material needs. There was intense fighting amongst the Catholic Church and the Christian Church on whether or not it was the job of a preacher to lead rebellion against the economic order. In Europe, there was actually no question about it. Yeah, that was part of the duties, especially those sects of Christians that were not part of the Catholic Church. In the United States, they were still debating it. And at the forefront of some of the, some more notable union demonstrations, but also a lot of others that were not, you know, and still aren't well televised, you had clergymen. Not a lot of them, but you had them. And there's a whole body of work for anybody who truthfully wants to see the majesticness of Christianity. Go back, go to that website that I give you periodically, archive.org. You can also find a lot of these books on Amazon. And just type in the social gospel from the 1890s, pick a year, 1892. or even the early 1900s, you'll find a treasure trove of documents, of books, of pamphlets, arguing, some for, some against, the need for the social gospel. And these things are good reads. A couple of years ago when I got involved with that, I was reading one book. It's like 200 pages. Not big print either. Not small print either. A lot of them are decent sized print. And so, you know, you're reading some books you read, right? I was reading this book, and I'm flying through it. You know, chapter one goes through, chapter two, chapter three, chapter four. And the arguments are succinct. They build on each other. They are powerful, and they are spiritual. They are spiritual. This is what is missing in the context of everything. When people talk about, social justice warriors, I used to kind of wonder, like, why would you even call yourself? Why? And then I realized there was a spiritual element that was supposed to be attached to that. And yet, nobody seemed to know it. The same with activism. A spiritual element that's attached to that. So, and yet nobody seems to know it. That is the intelligence part. That is the intelligence part. That's social intelligence meeting spiritual intelligence, meeting emotional intelligence, meeting mental intelligence, and manifesting through physical intelligence. Because at that level, when you get to manifesting in physical intelligence, something powerful happens. In the New Age, people talk about missions, soul missions, life missions. When you manifest from all five of those intelligences, you activate that clarion sense and sensibility, which is innate to the soul. Not everybody has a soul, unfortunately, but it is innate to the soul nonetheless. And you can see the people who don't have a soul once that starts to kick in. But there's a cosmic trigger then that turns when that happens. And within your DNA, there's a code. We would call it binary, even though it's not binary. It's more like trinary or quaternary. Quintinary? I don't know, it's big. Anyway. Those things get realigned and reshuffled, and then they also get activated. And that tells the cosmos, that tells the heavens, that tells the ancestors all at once that you are ready to be initiated into the secret knowledge of who you are. And you can propel and push forward to live out your soul mission because your soul mission is who you are. You are the treasure that the world has been waiting for. Some of us greater than others. But you are the treasure that the world has been waiting for. And once those things get turned, see, it's not about ego. The ego dies, it deflates. And let me tell you, that hurts. The great I am comes through, but the I becomes less. The am becomes emphasized. The soul becomes immortalized and empowered. They teach you this in the military through overcoming barriers, natural survival barriers. But this is what spiritual initiation is all about. And the problem today is we don't have the wherewithal to understand the connections of these powerful things. If we could see that social intelligence is composed of everybody in the vicinity of where we live, And that the amount of mental sickness and physical sickness is connected directly with the amount of social disturbances that we allow to go on each day without ameliorating and amending. That will help us feel better about ourselves, because most people are, they have horrible views of themselves. They can't stand themselves. And it's because they have learned to be inverted from their soul mission. So over the coming year, you know, as I'm going to be fragmenting this off and doing more economic stuff with the Class War Battlefield podcast, I may not be, well, I published, what, technically 16 episodes this year thus far. I will be starting a podcast dealing with spiritual concepts, but I'm doing it from a purely African standpoint. Does this mean Europeans should not listen? No. I invite you to listen. But be prepared, because you will have to go through the fire. You will have to go through the fire. And that's part of the holy day, holiday experience. Some holidays, and they're all cyclical, but not just in the way that we think. We think holidays come once a year. No. No, there's usually a 7 to 10, sometimes even a 20 to 25 year cycle of things that you're supposed to be doing with these specific holidays. Why do you think people talk about generations? This is a power sequence. This is an energy sequence. This is a spiritual sequence. When they talk about generations, that's because these holidays, these markers, mean something. And they don't mean the same thing every year. In a generation, you might have 3 or 4 cycles of a specific holiday. You might also only have one. And sometimes, you'll have a cycle for a specific holiday every 3 or 4 generations. Or 2 generations. Steve Bannon got in trouble. Because he said something which I said before myself, and it's true. He said, if you look at the United States, it seems every so often there's a major social disturbance. And there is. There's a pattern. You can see it. But he attributed it to the forces of conservatism needing to snatch back the mantle of the country. You do that enough time, your country falls. In the spiritual sense, it's good versus evil. It's good trying to rework and rewrite the ship. And it's evil saying no. Now, when I say evil, I don't mean, oh, devil, as many Europeans would mean. I'm talking about the art of anti-life and anti-living. That's what I'm talking about. When we engage in holidays, the energy we can use can be constructive, destructive, or neutral. For many people, it's neutral. And for other people, it's destructive. It feeds a vicious vision, which threatens to undermine and destabilize everybody who doesn't share in that vision of limited self. And by limited self, I really mean selfishness. That's destructive. I have conservative friends who will talk openly so much about this idea of this magnificent individualism, which never existed and never does exist. It can't exist. It's impossible to exist. But their vision is tied heavily to the spiritual canon of holidays for this country. So every holiday, they take a look at some form of their vision, and they say, we are going to empower it on this day. None of my progressive friends do that. None of them. And they wonder why these people keep gaining strength and power. Because they've tapped into holidays. They've tapped into the idea of celebrating every single holiday. No holiday in the Western culture, particularly the United States, is by accident. All of them align with some astrological, energetic feature of the cosmos on manifesting on this planet. Some of them even take place on the days of holidays, which pagans and indigenous people used to celebrate for various other reasons. Some of them actually do that. So every time when they are invoking, like let's say the 4th of July, there's a power source behind that. Which is why people start getting ready for the 4th of July on the 1st of July. July marks the mid, especially the beginning, the first week of July marks the middle part of the year. It marks the middle part of the year. It is essentially New Year's for the middle part of the year. And there's an energy and power in that. There's an energy and power in that. Just as what we consider the summer solstice is kind of like the winter solstice. It is Christmas in the summer. I don't know how many of you remember, some years ago they tried to actually make that a thing. There's power in that. And they have attached themselves to it. Labor Day, similarly, has power attached to that. Veterans Day, Memorial Day, all of these things have power. All of them. But what are we doing with that power? Now, for the forces of ill will, as Dr. King used to say, they've tapped into that power. They don't even know what they're doing with it. They just know that their power, that their vision keeps getting clearer and more focused and imposed onto the planet. So they keep doing it. Progressives don't. Because most of them don't have a spiritual sense. And don't come to me and tell me you do. And then say, oh, well, I go to church. I don't care if you go to church. That doesn't mean you have a spiritual sense. They just, they don't get it. They don't get that part of it. It's not about talking about Jesus Christ and putting social consciousness into the frame of the Bible and how that teaches you morality. Spiritualism isn't about that. That stuff is nice. But it's elevated beyond that. And that's why the church is dying. Because the church in and of itself doesn't understand that what it's preaching no longer aligns with where the planet is. So this is something that we have to get prepared for. We have to ready ourselves for, because this ain't going to change. The newer generation has already signaled that it's not going that route. And it's not going that route because what was supposed to be integrated into the church at the end of the civil rights movement into the 70s, was not. It wasn't. There was supposed to be this incredible radical tradition of energy, man. This energetic tradition was supposed to be infused into the church. And the snake element fought hard to stop that. Why? Because it would have illuminated the body again. It would have regenerated and renewed the body again, preparing it for metaphysics. And it would have expelled most of them. And they couldn't have that. So now the body is dying. Yeah, it's dead. It's decaying. Smells. So this newer generation are saying, we're not going back that way. We ain't doing that. Goodbye. We're not doing it. And this is something that all people need to be aware of. Because the newer traditions, the new traditions, which are trying to find their way upwards, and you see it, you see it. That's why, quote, pagan religions are starting to catch on. And churches, you know, I've heard pastors talk about, oh, well, they say in the end times that this was going to happen anyway. Get over yourself. Get over yourself. It's not hard to actually say 1,000 years ago, if you know that what you're doing is out of balance with what people have been doing for thousands of years, sooner or later, genetic memory is going to kick in, and people are going to gravitate back to what is natural for them. It isn't some great secret that the Bible got right. It's natural role. You don't believe me. You have animals in captivity performing tricks for years. They don't do anything to trainers, and then suddenly, boom, they snap. You have animals who have been in captivity since they were born. They don't know freedom. Maybe 2-3 generations in captivity, and then suddenly, boom, they attack the trainer. Why? Because genetic memory told them to do so. This is unnatural. We shouldn't be here. Prophetic tradition of the Hopi. Of ancient Africans, indigenous people throughout the world, says that this crazy thing called Christianity is going to die a horrible death because it's unnatural. It's not rooted in reality and what the needs are of the people. It's rooted in hierarchy and subjugation. So the church really isn't doing anything by saying, well, they said this was going to happen, and then that's going to tell you when Jesus is going to come back. Keep thinking that. This ain't an attack on Christianity. This is a reality. Which is a whole nother subject of how spiritually devoid people get emotionally attached to false realisms. And that can help to maintain them in that middle world area where they can then be manipulated against their will. These are advanced spiritual techniques, family. These are advanced spiritual techniques. Once you start to understand some of them, it changes your perspective to how you interact with the world and how you interact with certain people. We have to reconnect to a more intensely prosperous tradition in order to allow us to grow beyond this spiritually devoid place. That is what we must do. That is what we must do. This has been an incredible year doing these podcasts. I have had so much fun. You know, I'm sorry that like in the middle of the year, I, you know, kind of stopped producing them. But I haven't produced podcasts like this in this to this extent since 2012. Since 2012. And it feels wonderful. And I can't wait to continue to do it next year. And I can't wait to see what you think about the new Class War Battlefield podcast and the other podcasts that I'm planning. Next year, the beginning of next year, in January, I'll be able to finally unveil what the website's going to be called. I'll talk a little bit about why it's called that. Oh, and actually, see, I'm wrapping up the show, but I got a question. I got a question from somebody actually who listened to the show in my area, and they wanted me to explain why I utilize some of the things I do in the opening. And so let me touch on that very quickly. I said I would do it in the next recording. This was about a week ago when they asked me. So let me touch on that. First and foremost, I want to tell you, and I think I've made a mention of this before, that when I first started doing this, I did not have an opening. And if I can be very honest about it, it wasn't until later that I decided I kind of do need an opening. And as happens with a lot of amazing creative projects, I just started creating. I had an image in my head. And I both attribute that to myself, to who I am, and to the ancestors. There was a song that I loved immensely, and that was, of course, Inner City Blues. Of course, you know I like that. That's one of my favorite songs. And I had to think. It's funny because I had to think. I'm like, wait a minute. I know the title of the song is not what he actually says a lot in the song. He says, you know, makes me want to holler, way they do my life, this ain't living. But, that really was at the time one of my songs that was, like, heavily in my rotation over the last 3 years. So, this was 2012, the beginning of 2012, and I had just seen The Great Debaters, and that was kind of an inspiration for part of it. I was reading or listening to the book Uncle Tom's Cabin again for like the fourth time. There's a really good copy of it that someone read for LibriVox.org, and I was re-listening to it, and I remember thinking about that one part at the beginning. Like, the book starts off with the master calling Jim Crow in to dance for him, and I hate that part, man, and it just infuriates me. So I took that and put it at the beginning, you know. And then the gunshots which you hear is, look, you know, you a master, you are not my friend, and you will die. That's how it goes. Boom. So that was symbolic of the Civil War that still plagues the country. And then, of course, Inner City Blues kicks in. And now I'd like to tell you that, you know, I put everything in there, like, immediately, and it all just came together in my head. I'd be lying. At the beginning of 2012, I had the clip from The Great Debaters. I had the clip, or Inner City Blues, which I actually had to extend slightly. I actually had to edit it and extend it slightly. And I had the clip from The Great Debaters, Inner City Blues, and that's it. That's it. I then added, and actually, I'm sorry, that was at the end of 2011. That was really the end. I started that, actually. I started recording the podcast in September of 2011, right before Occupy Wall Street became big. And about a month, less than a month later, probably about a week or two later, I actually said, man, I kind of need something to introduce it with, but, eh. And so I put that together, and actually, I don't even think it started out as an introduction. It was just something that I was doing. And then later in the year, like December, I added the Jim Crow piece, and then I added the gunshots over it because it just infuriated me so much. And then literally, I think it was, I want to say February? It was either January or February where I was listening to, I think it's called State of the City, out of UK. And they literally, one of the guys, I was listening to him, and he said that quote about, you know, if you're not going to play by the rules and you demand that there's no rules, then don't go crying to your mama once when that happens. And, like, I stopped. I was doing something. I stopped and ran over, clipped it, threw it in there. And then I had all of that there. And the reason why I love that was because I could see the United States reaping what it sowed and the Western world reaping what it sowed, all because of that point. All because of that point. They demand these things, and then when it happens and they can't control it, they get mad. So then, I had just found the previous summer Dr. King's speech at the Conference for New Politics. And even to this day, it's one of the greatest speeches I've ever heard by him. I don't want to say that exists because I have read speeches which they have audio on, which they have never let the public hear. Ever. And these speeches, I think, if the delivery is on point, trump that speech. Give you a great example. In 1967, he spoke in front of the APA, the American Psychiatric Association, maybe. But anyway, that speech is amazing. Is absolutely mind-numbingly amazing. One speech that was, quotation marks, discovered about a year or so ago, which is called the Negro Revolution, or Some of Our Discontent, is similarly breathtaking on the heels of the disturbances in the riots. There's another one, too, that I have discovered. Oh, he gave a speech called The Role of Education in the Civil Rights Movement, Syracuse University. That's a brilliant, brilliant policy speech. Prior to Beyond Vietnam, he gave a speech called Casualties of the War and of Vietnam. Another brilliant speech. Domestic Impact of the Vietnam War. A brilliant speech that you can only find partial audio of, but if you read it, man, ooh, you can understand why they don't want that out there. You can understand why they keep that one hidden. But there's all kinds of stuff. Anyway, sorry. Get on Dr. King. It's like, you know, that's a passion to me. Anyway, where was I? Oh, so that was one of my favorite speeches, and I wasn't sure what part I wanted to use. I wanted to use another part, but when I was listening to it, that part didn't fit. And then I came across, I literally was scrolling through it to see what I wanted, and it happened to land on that, if America does not respond creatively to the challenge of racism, some historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality. I literally landed right at the beginning of that, and I clipped it. But I wasn't sure if I was still going to use it, because it is. It's a warning. I mean, it's, if you look at the clips that I included, they are sequential for a reason. The first one warns the United States to not wish for something that it's not going to be able to control because it's going to be damaging to it. And then that is followed by Malcolm X, which, by the way, I didn't choose that until later. Originally, I was going to have it go from the guy from State of the City to Martin Luther King, and then I happened to be listening to a Malcolm X piece. Actually, it wasn't even that I was listening to it. I was going through old clips, audio clips. Sometimes I will clip stuff because I'll say, okay, I'll probably use that sometime in the future on, you know, some project. And I happened to come across what Malcolm X said about America had the chance to engage in a non-violent revolution, which is funny because you don't think of Malcolm X as a non-violent guy, but that is what he said. And I couldn't pass that up, so I threw it in there. But I threw it in there before Dr. King. Because I wanted people to understand what needed to be done to go through that nonviolent revolution. You have to respond creatively to the challenge and problems of racism. And then, in the background, if you notice at the beginning, it starts off, I say, class war. That's actually me whispering. Using this, actually. I used this, actually, to do that. And then I looped it. I looped it and made it silent. Not silent, but faded it out. But then it seems like everything's said and done, right? Boom. It seems like there's not going to be another clip. And there wasn't. But again, I was listening to, this was during the wrap-up time of the Occupy Wall Street. You know, they were cleaning Occupy Wall Street up across the country. And I mean that literally. And they, one of the programs I happened to be listening to, I don't even think I listen to it anymore. The guy said, you know, when a system doesn't take care of the needs of the people, you got to change the system. And I thought, man, I got to end with that. Why? Because this is what the elite need to understand. People ain't rebelling because the system is taking care of their needs. They're rebelling because the system isn't taking care of their needs. And so I threw that in there. That is, the revolution, the nonviolent revolution, comes about because the system is changed deliberately by those who can make it happen. And so that's why I put that in there. Now, as for the other one, well, that one's a little bit too complex to get into, but in and of itself, it came from the idea that I wanted to use the song, They Don't Really Care About Us. And that portion, where you hear the Native American brother talking about, this was our country, you know, I wasn't putting that there to speak for Europeans. That's a spiritual call. Either you will fall in line with the rules of this continent and make a justice a reality for all, or the consequences will be severe. The natural law will strike back, and the tendency will be to rebuke you and to destroy you. I don't say that because I'm going to be violent with you. I don't say that because I'm going to be the hand of God. I don't say it because of any of that crap. These are cosmic principles. The earth is alive. The planet is alive. This land that you are sitting on is alive. It is connected to a massive intelligence, which is connected to a cosmic intelligence. You don't respect the laws. You don't follow the laws of this land. This land will evict you. And right now, the land, and it's funny because I started that, I want to say, in 2013, and there is an overriding sense for my ancestors to do it. The land wasn't in the type of mess that it is in today. I mean, it was bad, but it seems like things have gotten worse. It seems like things have gotten worse. And so, that was a way of saying, open your bloody eyes. You're violating the laws of nature, and nature ain't taking it anymore. And then the brother, Fred Hampton, is a way of literally saying, there's an amnesia. And this speaks a lot to black people. We have forgotten our role on this planet. Some Europeans understand this role because they too have it. But this is also a message to the progressives who study so much, who intellectualize so much. They can remember so much, but they don't use it for nothing. Amnesia in action. Maybe even amnesia of action. Which I think sounds better because it's the truth. You can remember everything internally, but when it comes to acting, you have an amnesia of action. Oh, that's powerful. I have to write that down. That's that powerful. But you do. You have an amnesia of action. And so in the tradition of Africa, when you remember an ancestor, especially a powerful warrior ancestor, or an ancestor with incredible diplomatic acumen, you better be ready to act with that, because that power, that connects you not only to that ancestor, but to the root. Hey, that's that word radical again, to the root, the spiritual ancestral root of the power source that gave the ancestor the ability to do that. Which is why so many European Americans are tired. Because they're remembering things that are not naturally theirs. And when they are remembering naturally things that are naturally there, they're not going back to the root. They're not going past that stuff. You got to get beyond where you're at. You got to get beyond, yes, you analyze the slavery stuff, analyze all of that stuff, and take responsibility for it. But if you want to know how to fix it, get beyond the Catholic Church and get back to your pagan roots and understand what the word pagan means. But I put it in there because you need, if you're not going to do what Hampton talked about, then why are you remembering it? RFK, same FK, right? RFK symbolizes the ability of the European to rise to the majestic challenge of the cosmos, of that cosmosic call to be that radical element for change. He wasn't killed because that man was a liberal. RFK was activated on a cosmic soul level. And for every European, American, European on this continent that was like him, man, it scared the powers that be because they fear that. They fear it immensely. They don't want that to happen in their own house. Because then you get back to really where you come from. And man, there's a history with that. And then the history, I'll tell you one of the myths. There's two myths, and I've mentioned one of them before, of how the European got to where the European got to. The first myth says, comes from Nkaji of South America. It says that the European was created just like the Kaji, living where the Kaji live, but the European, being the younger, mistreated the world. And so it was decided by the elders to send the European off to a place where they could learn how to respect and cherish the world, Europe, knowing that one day they would return back when they had matured enough to care for and do the to care for the world and do the correct rituals to take care of her. The second myth is that they essentially left Africa for the same reason. Those two myths, true or not, exist. To be able then, therefore, to get back to where you originally came from, to learn the pagan roots that stretch all the way back to the beginning, when you were part of the Kaji, when you were part of Africa, that ignites you. Everybody wants to be black. It's funny. I found this video of this little girl telling her mother, this blonde hair, blue-eyed European on this continent girl, probably no more than 6 or 7, telling her mother matter-of-factly while eating that when she grew up, she was going to be a black woman. And the mom was trying to argue against her. I was thinking, I was laughing. I'm like, well, you know, transracial, maybe that could make that possible, considering Rachel Dolezal, faker, she is. But that could make that possible. But then I thought about it. Is it possible also that she could be talking spiritually? Is it possible that she could be talking spiritually? If you get back far enough, you turn cosmic. And what do they keep telling you about the cosmos? The majority of it is what? Dark. Advanced spiritual concepts, ladies and gentlemen, I have to give it to you today. So RFK represents that spiritual concept, that cosmic concept, manifest in the European form on this continent. They feared him so much, they killed him before he could get to the White House. And while I don't necessarily believe that Chris Hedges right now represents that cosmic element, he definitely has the spark of it. And so there he is. This much is clear, we must rebel. There he is. And then right before both of them, you have Cornel West, who I may not always be a fan of, but the man does usually say what other people won't say. And it's almost frightening to think about what he said in 2013 compared to where we are now, 4 years later. A creeping fascism. Freedom isn't free. Freedom is precious. That's what you gotta always remember. So, there he is. He sets the table. He sets the table for the rest. Because the cosmic element, which is evident in the intermittent period where Fred Hampton, is speaking, and then it flips into RFK, and then Chris Hedges. That is inverted once when the Native Americans start speaking. Because this is what's going to happen anyway. The land is going to fight you anyway now. So either you're going to change and stand for what you say you stand for, or the land is going to do to you what the Hopi told you it would do. It's over. And yes, if you haven't figured out, I keep going back to the 60s. I talk a lot about the 60s. I keep going back to the 70s. I talk a lot about the 70s. Why? Because that was the last time when the cosmic principle was so evidently present on this planet. We've had an intermediate period to see if we were going to rekindle that. We haven't. Consequences now are preparing themselves. That's why I put down Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. That the Martin Luther King piece comes from the first Massey lecture that he conducted. Find it. Oh my God, find it. It's amazing. It's called Impasse of Race Relations. Find it. It is brilliant. He says, and I didn't put the whole quote, he says, a storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth. The storm will not abate until a just redistribution of, I think he says resources. I can't remember the exact words. I'm sorry. But it's at the end of this 30-minute piece that is just, it's staggering. And I wanted to use it, so I put it there. And the reason why I had the guns at the beginning, loading, is because when Martin Luther King started edging towards telling the truth to prepare the country for initiation into the higher realm of spiritual consciousness, yeah, you heard what I said. These are higher spiritual concepts. It's time that you grow up. It's maturity time. You got me? It's maturity time. When it became clear in 1964 that he was moving in that direction And in 1965, when Malcolm was killed, and he began to definitely push forward that toward that way, they readied those guns, but they couldn't kill him until they were sure where he was heading. And when he moved into the anti-war full-time, which I wish he had done it earlier and connected with black people, because the most underreported part of history of that moment was black people were incredibly anti-war, and they had been protesting the Vietnam War since the mid part of the first half of the 60s. Malcolm X talked about it. And what was it, 62? 62 or 63. Black people were staging sit-ins about the Vietnam War and the Vietnam conflict in 62 and 63. The Vietnam protests arrived late to white college campuses. And Dr. King talks about this, by the way, in, I think it's Massey Lecture number 3, where he mentions how it was black people who showed white people that they could get up and they could rise above and they could take action to change their civilization and their society. It was black people who did that. But as he moved that way and they checked off the boxes to say that he was, in the words of the FBI, he was a messiah. They did the same thing with Malcolm, which is why he had to be expelled from the nation, because he was a messiah, according to them. They prepared to kill him. And in the new book by Tavis Smiley, he says, Dr. King knew there was a bullet out there with his name on it. That's metaphysical too, can I just tell you that? That's metaphysical too. So he said that. And then Malcolm said, and actually Malcolm preceded him, it's liberty or it's death. And they had to shut them both up. Because it wasn't bad enough that, and it was bad enough, that they were messing with black people. That they were getting the Negroes all riled up. But then they started influencing white people. And this was the problem. See, when you integrate a cosmic principle, you change everything. When you integrate any principle, you can, certain principles are strong enough but weak enough where you can amend it and you can manipulate it in a way that can allow you to do incredibly evil work utilizing it. But there are certain cosmic principles that once you institute them, they change everything. And they change everything to the extent that if you are not able to assimilate with that principle, you die. I'm not joking. You die. That was the physical manifestation of the Red Scare. Or not the physical manifestation of the Red Scare. That is why the Red Scare happened, should I say. Because they were trying to physically manifest that idea of being able to integrate a principle to the extent that, you know, you can't challenge it. You can't challenge it. They were saying capitalism couldn't be challenged. The reality is capitalism is, in and of itself, it needs to be challenged because it is inconsistent with the laws of nature and nurture. Laws of nature and nurture. And they're both. So I put it in there, the gunshots. Not because I put it in the first one, but because it's the truth. They killed them because they held the truth. And then, the news part was put in there to really alert people to the fact that what is coming, what is happening presently, is connected to what happened back then. And what is going to be required, that's Fred Hampton, must be remembered, but it cannot be remembered unless you are going to act. There are very few Europeans on this continent, European Americans, who understand the sacrifices of their own people to try to save them from the enslavement which they enjoy today. And don't tell me you don't enjoy it, because if you didn't enjoy it, you wouldn't suffer it. They tried to save them from it. And there's far too few of them. How did they get the general white population to turn against these saviors? They're radical. They're trying to take you back to the Stone Age, to the primitive time. I hear conservatives make that argument all the time. I just thought it was because they were stupid. Then I realized, oh no, I'm sorry, this is part of their religion. This is part of their internal coding. They believe this nonsense. They're living in a fantasy world created by primitive circumstances which no longer characterize the reality which they live. Hyper-individualism. It's survival of the fittest. No, it's not. The United States produces 2 times as much food as it needs. And it's not feeding the world. In many instances, the techniques which it exports starves the world. It starves the world. So therefore, survival of the fittest, which is something that you do when food is scarce, doesn't fit the reality anymore. And yet they swear it does. They swear it does. Because their minds are not evolved enough. They can't exploit unless they tell you that you have to fight for every scrap. And now, how they've got you to buy into it is they have connected spiritually the idea of consuming to the idea of life, as if consuming is all life is. Life is multi-cyclical. It is not about consuming. Now, that's another day. I mean, This is why I put that together. That's the vision. And I'll be honest, you know, like some great creative works, sometimes when I started it out, it wasn't like I had, you know, that detailed vision in mind. I had an idea of why I wanted certain things to go in there. Some of those ideas went out the window. But I didn't have the detailed description which I just shared with you. That's the ancestral. That's that higher elevation. And sometimes it's amazing. And I guarantee you've done this. Sometimes you'll create something. Let's say it's a poem. Let's say in a moment of deep despair and depression, you create a song. The song doesn't make any kind of sense to you. But you create it. And you say, this is something interesting. And it touches you deeply. You don't know why it touches you deeply, but it does. And then 3, 4, 5 years down the road, the multi-layered, multi-level, multi-dimensionality of what you created pops out. And it shows you a new existence that you didn't even know existed. Not only outside of you, but more importantly within you. This is the spiritual attentiveness and aptitude, the spiritual intelligence at its level, at its, not level best, at its overflowing best, because it calls you to grow. You are unconscious until it touches you. Oh, that's the reality. So at the beginning of the program, when I talked about the need for that spiritual rising, for us to really get back in touch with it, I meant it. I meant it. We need to have vision connected to spiritualism right now. We do. Because right now, most of the vision is anti-emotion. So you don't have passion anymore. You are just robotic. It's fearful. It's destructive. And it's self-sabotaging. We have to get away from it. Lest we become victims of our own circumstance. Ah, ladies and gentlemen, man, it's been a long time since I've done one like this. I'm going to tell you what it reads on my recorder. Hour and 35 minutes. It's been a long time since I've done that. Oh, my God. I apologize to any of the radio stations that are going to be playing this. I really do. I apologize. I didn't expect it. I really didn't. And that's, you know, typically when I record, a show is less than 45 minutes. Sometimes it would go over, but usually it's less than 45 minutes. Rarely is it more than 50. Rarely is it more than 50. Right now, this is double what I normally do. But the ancestors were moving, and they wanted me to set the tone and the foundation for next year, because I will be producing podcasts, sermonic podcasts, where I'm delivering sermons and I'm delivering speeches on spiritual information. And I guarantee something. I don't know if it'll be next year, but the idea of amnesia of action will be a sermon topic and idea. Guaranteed. You can remember everything internally, but when it comes to action, you have an amnesia of action. I have to do something with that. But I'm going to be doing it for a couple of reasons. One, we need to build our spiritual intelligence, and we need to build spiritual intellect. We have to. If we do not, and if we don't change our relationship to God energies and the spiritual realm and social consciousness and all of that, nothing's ever going to change, because that's what the world is. Finally, physics is catching up and telling us that the world is not what we see. What we see is a minute part of the world. It's tiny. What we don't see is far greater. So, prepare for that. You know, this is going to become an intellectual discourse, I think. And it may even become obsolete sometime in the next couple of years. But we'll see. But I want you to realize, you know, again, what I'm doing is, it's from a black tradition, and it is for black people. But I invite anybody who wants to truthfully call themselves socially conscious, socially aware, I invite you all to listen. Why? Because I'm coming from the motherland. That's what I'm coming from. I'm coming from the motherland, and you are all children from that motherland. And if you want it bad enough, the mother will accept you back, cleanse you, resurrect you, direct you, and propel you. But you gotta want it, and you gotta adhere to it. Have a great holiday season. Have a great holiday season. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. All of it. Man, this has been a great year. You know, I got two more coming up next week. Finish off the year strong. Much love to all of you. God bless you. Peace and love to your family. May the Son of God come upon your home. Peace, family. And the country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.